Hey dear podcast listeners, I'm Angel from China and a cloudy monster. Due to personal matters, Kun won't be able to host this episode together with me, and he's definitely sorry for that. So we realized our podcast hasn't had an episode on the conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan, and it's been exactly 1 year since the last major Nagorno-Karabakh war broke out. So this week we invite a van from Armenia to share his insights on this issue. Here's a little reminder before you start listening to this episode. This issue is still controversial international-wide, that please respect the diversity of opinions. Narrations I've heard from Azerbaijani and Amel were mostly different. Yet everyone's opinion is highly related to their education background and political environment around them, and it's undeniable for individuals to be biased. Our podcast simply hopes to take you to look at what Armenians' opinions actually are through this episode instead of judging who's right or wrong. We also would like to provide opinions from the other side, but unfortunately we don't have anyone related to Azerbaijan within our community. We sincerely wish our listeners can stay open-minded about different perspectives. Let's get started.
Hi.
So, okay, well, where are you from and where do you live right now and how old are you?
Yeah, I'm ethnically Armenian, but I've been around, I guess. I'm 18.
So firstly, could you give us a brief throwback on what happened this time last year?
Okay, so we had a small outbreak before the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict where Azerbaijan attacked Armenia. But like, as every time it happens, the same thing, like, both sides blame each other for the conflict and nobody gets sanctioned, international agencies don't get involved, from third state parties, the only people who get involved, the only nations that get involved, states, are usually just Turkey and other countries that support Azerbaijan, so it's a bit sad. So after that small outbreak that had a couple of deaths, we went through a truce, ceasefire and everything, and then a couple of months later, the war in Nagorno-Karabakh started. Again, both sides blamed each other for it. Nobody knew who to believe. But before that, Turkey was doing some military training, military drills in Azerbaijan with their pilots and aircrafts and everything. So they left the aircrafts there. If you ask me, that's very convenient for them. But again, I'm going to try not to be biased. It's going to be very hard, but I'll try not to be biased for this, I don't know, interview,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, I understand that.
But yeah, after that outbreak happened, it went on for more than 2 to 3 months. It was in the beginning of quarantine, like COVID outbreaks everywhere in the world. People stopped caring about COVID. Nobody wore masks anymore because we had a bigger threat to our lives coming our way. Yeah. But yeah, that's how it started.
What is the most common opinion on this issue within Armenia, like domestically?
Okay. So everybody believes the region belongs to us, especially after we fought for it, like in 1988, for the first time after the break of the Soviet Union, and we won that war, and the entire region was populated by our people. It just seems a bit useless after so many years for another war to happen just to repopulate it with the other nation. Again, like during the Soviet Union, like Armenians and Azerbaijanis, they lived peacefully together, like. Our cultures were very similar at that point, being underneath the Soviet regime. And they lived together. I can't say whether it was in harmony or not because I wasn't there. But like from stories I hear, like it was completely fine. And then after the Soviet broke off, they needed to do something about it, I guess. And they started a war that way. And like after that, they always wanted to incorporate Nagorno-Karabakh into Armenia. But I guess that would be viewed as annexation, and then Armenia would get sanctioned. So Nagorno-Karabakh stayed as a
autonomous
territory. Yeah. And yeah, until like last year when Azerbaijan took it back. It was internationally recognized as Azerbaijan territory. So that's why when the conflict happened, nobody, like from the international communities, like IGOs and everything, nobody like bat an eye, nobody sanctioned Azerbaijan for all the war crimes they did and everything. But yeah, the people there, it hit them hard. Like, families lost a lot of children.
I heard like the if you're a male and you're over like
18,
you have to go.
Yeah, so a lot of families lost their boys to the war. We had our first two female divisions that were made because of the war, but they didn't get to get deployed because then the last ceasefire was released, because we had several before that. They just weren't respected.
Okay.
Then the peace treaty was signed, so it was all good. But yeah, like the general opinion is that it belongs to Armenia. I mean, that's conflicted from the other side, if you ask them. They think it belongs to them and all.
Okay, so, but what's your argument? Are they arguing, like, because of ethnicity, like, living on that land is mainly Armenian, that's why it should belong to Armenia?
I mean, yeah. Throughout the years, like, Azerbaijanis claim that they have historical claims over that land. But even if you go, like, through history, like, with the great empires Armenia had, if they want to go that far back, like, it belonged to us too. And then throughout the years, the entire population was like majority Armenian, and for them to take it back and to make it like completely Azerbaijani, that's a bit.
So like a territorial and versus identity issue. So how is the situation right now after the ceasefire last year?
I mean, flares happen here and there constantly.
Like small conflicts.
Yeah, flare-ups. Like, I keep reading about them in the news, and then, like, we still have prisoners of war in Azerbaijan, which, for some reason, are not returning, even after, like, several states, NGOs, IGOs, like, urging Azerbaijan to, like, free them, especially after the peace treaty. Like, they have no reason to keep those prisoners there. We have a lot of prisoners of war. We have people who are being, like, taken to court in Azerbaijan, like civilians, not even soldiers. And like civilians, because Armenia has a huge diaspora, people from Lebanon, Lebanese Armenians also joined the war. And so, so they were kind of viewed from Azerbaijan side as imported fighters. So that in that kind of way, they kind of called them terrorists in a couple of articles that I've read too.
Okay.
So it was... It's that they're all ethnically Armenian, and most of them have dual citizenship. So yeah, that they're getting like taken to court in Azerbaijan. So that's a bit disturbing.
But before the war last year, I think the war last year. Have you been to the area? And
I have.
Okay, what is it like back then?
it's really pretty. Like trees everywhere. I mean, it's a bit of a mixture. You have forests and a deserty environment, just like everywhere else in Armenia. Not deserty, but a bit like more plain land, you know. But it's really pretty. The buildings there, the architecture, like in general, after the first war we had in 1988, like I mentioned, from after the Soviet Union, people spent a lot of money on that piece of land. In Armenia, it's not like very economically developed at this point. So like spending that much money on a territory and then getting
military action. Is that like in infrastructure or like military action in that area? Like where did the money go?
No, it went to infrastructure. Like
Okay. People
build stuff. They built their houses. A lot of our, we had mines there. We had gold mines, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And we had a lot of farms there. Like people from outside, again, from the diaspora, would buy lands there to like farm and everything. And a lot of those lands are taken away, and I don't think they're going to be compensated for those people, you know. But yeah, it's a really pretty territory, I guess, at this point. But
yeah, I mean, it's quite hard to enter right now, I think.
Also, like there was this wall there. I still have a picture of it, like with me. It was like a wall of license plates, Azerbaijani license plates. On like they put all of them, like they took it off cars and put it on the wall, and it's just a long wall of Azerbaijani license plates inside Artsakh. Like after the war, they just stripped them all off and put them on walls. That was a bit cool, yeah.
But before either. Like, people from Artsakh, did they actually try to do something, like a referendum or something to justify their decision of belonging to Armenia?
I mean, yeah, that's the thing, though. A referendum would have been hard to do because it's the same concept of, in the Soviet Union, Crimea being given to Ukraine.
Okay.
You know, and now Russia trying to get it back. It's like that kind of thing. Like, nobody asked Armenia if we're okay with, like, that sort of land not belonging to us anymore. And after they went out of the Soviet Union, immediately a war started. Like, the population was already divided. so how are you going to do a referendum when there's a war going on?
Okay,
and after Armenia won the war, like, all the Azerbaijanis were either kicked out or they left on their own terms so that, you know, they feel safer in their country under their own regime.
Okay.
But yeah, like, after they left, there was no point in referendum because, like, 99% of the population was Armenian ethnically. Yeah.
But now, within Armenia, is there any, like, opposition people, like, saying something against the major opinion?
Against the opinion that Artsakh belongs to us?
Yeah, within Armenia. Is there anyone who believes that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, even after the peace treaty was signed where, like, they gave away all the land except for the capital city.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a small piece of land that they kept to Armenia. Okay, so yeah, after the second war happened, and after the peace treaty was signed by our prime minister, Nikol Pashinyan, the same guy who led the revolution, public opinion about him changed in a matter of seconds. Everybody stormed the National Assembly building of Armenia. Like, it was crazy. Civilians went out to the streets. Everybody was pissed. And people started burning their houses and left the territory so that, you know, it doesn't get in the hands of the opposition. I don't know the exact reason, but in my head it makes sense.
Like,
if I can't have it, nobody can have it sort of thing, you know?
Okay, really strong, like, I won't say nationalism, but really strong emotion for the country.
Yeah. No, like, thing is, our country has been oppressed throughout generations. So every family has lost something to wars. So war for us has it's a really hard topic. And yeah, I mean, it's still, like, especially the genocide, like, it happened more than 100 years ago at this point, but it's still, like, a fresh wound. Since we all, like, know the stories. I mean, my parents know it directly from survivors. I know it from my parents who know it from direct survivors. So it's still a bit of it's an open wound.
Yeah.
And everybody in the country has lost something to this war, especially. Like, last war, we had deaths too, but maybe I wasn't born, so I didn't really feel the effects of it. But even when I hear stories, like, it took a big toll on people, but this war was even bigger. We had, like, 4,000 to 5,000 deaths, and for a population of, what, 2.5 million?
Okay.
That's a lot of deaths. And I'm telling you, everybody felt the effect of it. Every single person, even in the diaspora, people were feeling it. Like, so much money was raised from outside, from people who live outside. Aid was coming in from everywhere.
Yeah.
Everybody.
The Armenian community overseas.
Yeah. That, like, everybody was trying to buy stuff. Like, there were meetup points where people would just, like, get stuff, put it there, and send it back, which also pissed people off. Because the military kept asking for sleeping bags and things like that. Why does our military not have sleeping bags and tents?
Okay.
Like every other military. But yeah. Like, it's definitely, till now, like, it's an open wound. Even the second war, like,
yeah.
Everybody has felt the effects of it. Everybody knows someone who has died in the war. Like, several of my friends were at the war, and some of the members of the same scout club I went to, like, died during the war, like, from my division, even.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
People who were 18, 19, most of the deaths were people who were, like, our age. That was a bit, like, very messed up.
Yeah, that's really cruel. Yeah, but for this issue, like, from your perspective, based on your, like, own experience, do you think there might be any, like, possible solutions on this issue? I mean, it's really hard because it's territorial related to identity, but, like, for you, any possibility?
I guess most people would say, oh, it's resolved. I mean, most people would say it's not resolved because with the peace treaty, more people are pissed than happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this makes more of a negative peace. Like, one side lost more than the other side gained.
Yeah.
So it feels extremely unfair to one side. And from my biased, humble opinion, the power hungry regime of Azerbaijan won't stop at this. Like, in my opinion, this was just the start of it. And if you listen to some diplomats from the Turkish side, they'll tell you the same thing. Because if you hear to their speeches that they said, I'm quoting right now, I don't necessarily know who said it, but if you search it up, it will be right there. It was a Turkish diplomat, and I remember it said, Nagorno-Karabakh is the beginning, we're gonna be returning Armenia to its former state. So yeah, in my opinion, this is the most negativist of a piece that can be there. And as far as it goes, the only way for this to be resolved is if other third-party states, third-party organizations, like just third-party actors being involved in it, if we get border control from an IGO, like if the UN decides to step in at any point, that would be really nice and appreciated. Because the issue seems to be that with the Nagorno-Karabakh territory, nobody could help because disputed territory, so there was that.
I mean, that's like same as Crimea, that is like
a
lot of factors involved.
Yeah. And another thing was who started the fire, who broke the ceasefire that, you know, that it was agreed on, and nobody knows because both sides blame each other. So if you put international border control, that kind of takes the bias out of it. And it won't be resolved until the power dynamic equals out, because the way I see it, it's one nation against 4 to 5.
So you were talking about the power hunger of Azerbaijan and Turkish government, but back to Armenian government, do you think they're doing do you think they're perfect or like?
I mean, absolutely no.
Yeah, of course, but like I mean, in terms of this issue.
The Armenian government could have done things in a better way, I guess. Like, when we won the first war, I keep referring back to it in a nostalgic way, because
we
missed those days. But yeah, during the first war, after we won, we had the upper hand. We could have written the peace treaty on our terms, but even back then, our government was very corrupt.
Okay.
And I guess for good relations, they decided to make it a disputed territory, and for the peace treaty, they didn't even ask Azerbaijan to accept the territory as its own sovereign territory, as, you know, the Republic of Artsakh. So they messed up big time there, and later on, Armenia's stance in this war is very weak. Like, we are the oppressed in a way. We don't nearly have the numbers that they do. We don't nearly have the technology that they do. So it's really hard to go wrong from an oppressed point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever you do, you're doing it to protect yourself. Yeah. Like, the government isn't perfect, but it definitely is not evil in any way. We're just trying to keep what's ours. We're not trying to take any more.
Understood. So other than the tension with Azerbaijan, Armenia also have definitely some problems with Turkey.
Yeah.
As we all know. So how about its relation with its third neighboring countries, which is Georgia?
So Turkey there, that's why. And then like the trade was stopped during the war because of all of that. And then Georgia. Georgia seemingly was always in good relations with Armenians. Like, we have a big diaspora in Georgia. Like, a huge chunk of the Armenian community refused to Georgia after the genocide and everything. So, the people there are good with Armenians. Like, culture-wise, we're very similar people. And when it comes to societies, we're good. But the government during the war locked all the borders with Armenia, as in no military aid could be taken to Armenia.
So I feel like Georgia is trying to just maintain in the middle stand.
It's trying to be neutral. Yeah. But its neutrality is going directly against Armenia because it's helping the Turkish and Azerbaijani co-op mission against Armenia rather than, you know, being neutral. Because if you block all foreign aid going into Armenia, like, even sleeping bags couldn't be taken in from the Georgian border. Like, any type of aid was, like, that had anything to do with the military conflict was not allowed to go into Armenia through Georgia. Like, trucks were stopped and everything. It was... But military aid could be taken from Turkey to Azerbaijan through Georgia for some reason. So they said they tried to be neutral. All the information out there, all the quotes from their diplomats says that, oh, we're trying to stay neutral. But, you know, actions speak louder than words. So Georgian-Armenian diplomatic relations were messed up after that. But since we only have four neighboring countries, and two of them are Azerbaijan and Turkey, like, I guess Armenia is more on the forgiving side. In this scenario, we can't afford to lose a neutral ally, if you must. But the main ally, the way I see it during this war, was Iran. Like, they had their borders fully open. It was the only border you could have taken aid through. So every single foreign aid that was coming from the people outside came through Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the Iranian government members showed support for Armenia, despite their north being inhabited by ethnically Azerbaijani people. And with the aid concerning Armenia side, I said, like, Armenia got no help from, like, third state parties. Despite being in the OSCE Minsk group, which is a military union of several ex-Soviet countries. But none of them provided aid to Armenia because of the status of the disputed territory. So they were scared of being sanctioned. But several members of the OSCE Minsk group showed aid to Azerbaijan, such as Ukraine.
Ukraine
shows a lot of aid to Azerbaijan, even despite the fact that Ukraine also has a big diaspora of Armenians and, like, good relations throughout. But I believe Ukraine did that in spite of Russia.
Yeah. I mean, similar situation, you know.
Yeah, to show that they can't be okay with the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict when they have the Crimean situation on their hands.
Okay.
So they have to put their country's values first, which is understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's all for today's episode. Thank you very much. We really hope the crisis between Armenia and Azerbaijan could improve in the future. Also, for UDPC people, that if you would like to discuss or know more about this issue, he would like to share his opinions with you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.